Welcome to The Grand Conversation, the Machon Siach podcast. Machon Siach at SAR High School, honoring the memory of Belda Kaufman Lindemann, Zichrona Livracha, is the research arm of SAR High School, where faculty bridge theory and practice on matters of Jewish education, curriculum, and culture. I am your host, Shmuel Hain, Rosh Beit Midrash at SAR High School. Our producer is Avi Bloom, and our engineer in the studio today is Greg Schmidt. This episode of the podcast is called This Too is Torah, and is devoted to the subject of researching and teaching Jewish sexual ethics, both in our high school and in the broader modern Orthodox community. On this podcast, we are thrilled to be in conversation with Ms. Shuli Taubes, who has researched, compiled, revised, and written a curriculum for our 10th grade Beit Midrash program on Jewish sexual ethics, values, and practice. Ms. Taubes is a longtime faculty member at SAR High School, where she teaches Tanakh, Jewish identity, and chairs our Jewish philosophy, or Machshevet Yisrael, department. She also has developed and teaches a curriculum for educating modern Orthodox high school students in comparative religion. Shuli has also been a sought-after, and she is a certified teacher for brides and couples before marriage. She was also previously the Sofer Community Scholar at YOZ of North Riverdale Yonkers for a number of years, and she has a master's from Harvard Divinity School and a BA from Barnard College in History. Welcome, Shuli, to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
All right, let's begin with the story of this curriculum and your writing and research on this particular subject. How did you begin focusing on this subject, and why did you end up devoting so much time and energy to thinking about researching and writing about Jewish sexual ethics?
So I always like to tell one particular story when it hit me that I should have more to say on this topic, but it was really a sort of a confluence of different things that happened. But for that story, I will never forget Mr. Simon Fleischer, a great colleague of mine, asked me if I'd be willing to sit down with the entire 11th grade by myself. I would sit on a chair and they would all sort of sit on the floor, and I would talk to them about what are the basic Jewish sexual ethics and practices. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, I have no idea how I would answer that question.
How many years ago was this?
That was about a decade ago. And I teach theodicy. I teach comparative religion and the idea that of multiple revelations. And I'm really comfortable talking about almost any topic. And so it struck me that here was such a fundamental part of life and human development, and I was going to have to sit down with 11th graders, and I had no idea where to begin that conversation. And I was full of anxiety, mostly about saying the wrong thing. And when I tried to look around for resources to consult to figure out what should I say to high school students, I didn't find anything that I felt would really speak to where our students were at. That was sort of one area in my life where this became really relevant. I had also recently been trained as a Kala teacher, and I had had a chavruta with Dr. Jenny Rosenfeld, who wrote her PhD thesis on modern Orthodox sexual ethics, and I had just begun reading that. And I had done these classes in Washington Heights with Dr. Rivka Schwartz and Yoetzer Halacha Dina Block, where we met with modern Orthodox singles to talk about how they were thinking about and navigating their sexual selves within the realms of halacha, outside the realms of halacha. And when all of this came together, I thought we need to do a better job as a community with education around this.
So I want to just highlight one point that you made there, or one formulation of their sexual selves within the halacha and outside of the halacha. And I think that's where this issue becomes somewhat challenging for a modern Orthodox yeshiva high school, which is encouraging its students to keep halacha. What do you mean by our sexual selves within the bounds of halacha, outside the bounds of halacha? What does it mean to write about Jewish sexual ethics, values, and practice?
So yeah, this is a really complicated question. The halacha has a very specific bottom line in terms of behavior and practice and expectation of community members, as do communal institutions. And that doesn't always match what people's personal practices are. Everyone's navigating a relationship with halacha. And obviously, as Jewish educators, we want the ideal to be the reality. That is what we are trying to make match. In this particular area, we were leaving students to navigate this whole area of their sexual selves, both as just independent human beings and in terms of their relationship with halacha. We were leaving them to navigate it completely by themselves. We were giving no guidance. So that if they knew the halacha and had complete fealty to it, good, so they knew exactly what to do. Now, I still see problems even with that attitude, which I'm happy to address, but if they decided, well, I don't really, halacha doesn't get me, or I don't really understand the halachot, and I'm not sure I'm going to keep this, what voice was in their heads to help them navigate being an ethical person in a relationship or even in any kind of sexual interaction? They had developed no moral compass around sexuality. And we know that in order to develop a pole star that guides you in any area of ethics, you have to start when people are young. You can't first expect people who, right, we start teaching halacha, values, ethics, all of that, right before marriage, which today can be in any decade, of in 20s, 30s. We can't start then. You can't start developing an ethic when you're an already fully formed adult. It leads to, I think, too many bad decisions being made prior to that, and even within the relationships that you have, even within marriage, if you don't start developing yourself until that point. So people are developing sexually because that's what happens developmentally, and that has nothing to do with halacha. That has to do with being a human in the world. And then you're also, you have this whole realm of halacha, and how do the two interact, and how do we navigate that? That's what we need to start thinking about.
So you're not talking about teaching details of Hilchot Nida and Shiva Nikiyim and a mikvah and those kinds of things in high school. You're talking about something broader. So what are the kinds of things that you have done research on or that you feel like it's really important to share, beginning with adolescence, with high school students?
So I just want to be clear. I do think we should teach that stuff, but I don't think it needs to be in 10th grade. In 12th grade, we do more of that. And that, to be honest, has more to do with the fact that as high school teachers, we sometimes feel like we have to cover everything because we're so insecure about what's going to happen when they leave here. But certainly in 10th grade, and ideally it should start really much younger, is a comfort with understanding one's own body, but certainly with communication, with consent, with understanding your relationship with God, even in areas when you fall short of halachic practice. It's thinking about the kind of person you want to be in any relationship that you are in. And what does that mean about yourself? What does that mean about others? How do you instill the understanding that no person is an object? No person is there for you to use as a tool somehow for yourself. And that really applies, again, in every area. Sexuality is one of them. And it's one, unfortunately, that if it's not cultivated, can lead to tremendous harm if people aren't sensitive practitioners. So what does it mean to truly see another person as created B'Tselem Elohim? And how? What would it look like to interact with that person with that understanding that every time you interact with them, there's high ethical stakes, especially in the realm of sexuality, because again, it has the possibility of offering so much pleasure, but also so much hurt.
So I'm thinking about this, though, through the lens of my upbringing, which was an all-boys school. I married somebody who went to an all-girls school. And in those days, these subjects were taboo, and it was a little bit, the feeling was, you know, if we start talking about the kinds of things that you're discussing, are we then not offering a kind of imprimatur or some kind of signal that the halacha is not the bottom line when it comes to these subjects? What's your response to the critique that maybe this should be taboo? Maybe the rabbis in Tractate Chagiga have it right when we shouldn't be discussing these subjects too publicly. What's the downside of keeping this on the down low?
So I understand the primary critique, and I've heard this from a lot of people, and I really deeply take it to heart, is that somehow having this discussion is tacit approval of non-halachic behavior, and that we're saying that the halacha is not the bottom line. But yes, the Mishnah in Chagiga, to which you refer, states that you should not really learn about sexuality in groups larger than three, implying that a class about this would be wrong. But if all over the Gemara are stories about rabbis, great rabbis, struggling with sexual desire. I always say we have stories of rabbis traveling to great lengths to sleep with renowned prostitutes. We don't have the same stories about them going for like the best pork chop, right? That they'll just travel forever because they didn't get to have that. So the rabbis clearly struggled and understood the nature of this particular challenge and didn't shy away from exploring, I think, this very complex dynamic around what is human nature and sexuality. And I also think, just from a data perspective, it is just not true that talking about something makes more people do it, right? That was the critique about of having general comprehensive sex ed curriculums in any school, was that we are now going to have more kids having sex. The data has proven that is actually not the case, that the more comprehensive the sex ed curriculum, more children and teenagers are delaying the onset of sexual activity. That is what the data has confirmed. And so at least here, I think opening up the conversation makes it a space that is safe for students to begin questioning, to ask the right questions, and for us to be able to provide them with really good information, because we are kidding ourselves if we think they're not getting that information from elsewhere. They are. If we don't want to be a guide for them, then they'll Google, they'll watch porn, they'll watch anything on Netflix or TikTok. That's where they're getting their sources of information. So it's out there. It's very available in ways that when we were growing up, it wasn't that available. It wasn't that explicit. And so we have to understand where our students are at and meet them where they are at, not as a bidieved, but as a lecharchila. Now, I think it's also important to acknowledge that not all students struggle with the same challenges, and some may not be drawn to sexually explicit material at all. One concern raised is that our approach might negatively impact these students by making them feel left out or not normal, or introducing unhealthy behaviors that were never on their radar screens before. To address this, we begin by emphasizing that everyone experiences different impulses and challenges, and what we are discussing may not be relevant to every individual at this time. We also acknowledge that individuals change and grow, and we want to equip our students with the knowledge and skills to navigate any challenges that they may encounter in the future. Furthermore, at SAR, we're not only addressing individuals, but trying to build a good and healthy community. And that means teaching people how to be a friend and resource to someone who is struggling. Students need to understand how to respond to a friend with compassion, conviction, and I think most importantly, knowledge. Teachers also, we're committed to open and honest communication with our students, while at the same time prioritizing tsniut as a central value in all of our discussions. We have so much to offer them. The Gemara is so rich. We have so many beautiful sources from which to draw inspiration to help cultivate a gorgeous sexual ethic. Judaism has so much to say on this topic. Let's give them access to it.
Great. And so I now kind of we've framed the impulse and the rationale behind this. I want to get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty of how you produced both an essay on this subject and a kind of guided curriculum for that. In what context did you start doing that work? What are those different pieces, which we're going to make available together with this podcast again for our listeners? In what context do you see each of those playing a role?
Okay. So the paper, which I actually started before I started on this curriculum, there was always a curriculum and a really good curriculum that was ahead of its time, that was produced by Rabbanit Lisa Schlaff and Mr. Simon Fleischer, who really worked on that curriculum. So there was always something being done here at SAR. And I should be clear, Dr. Yocheved Debo produced an excellent curriculum many years ago and a guide for parents to talk to their children about sex. But the curriculum is not being as widely utilized as it should be. But I wrote my paper because it's really an advocacy paper. I'm trying to make the argument that we actually have a religious imperative to do better at this work for the sake of the psychological and religious health of our community, of marriages in our community. That is the goal of the paper, so to make that argument, but to also show the downside of what happens when we don't do a good job at this. And I've used a lot of my own anecdotal experience, but also the research that's being done by others in the community around this area, that we have to take this very seriously. This is not a small thing. You know, I always feel in this particular area, and the paper really argues this, is that modern orthodoxy is in a really unique place when it comes to sexuality, because we encourage and we've bought into sort of the modern idea of romance, that emotionally you create intimacy with the person, you fall in love prior to marriage, and we advocate that very strongly. You know, we've all probably been a little judgy of the people who were like, wait, you got engaged after 4 weeks or whatever it was, because like, how could you possibly know someone? On the other hand, while we're advocating for this sort of emotional intimacy, we are asking people to restrict any kind of physical intimacy that is usually matched with falling in love. And that is a very unique ask in modern orthodoxy. Because it's not true of communities sort of to the, excuse my use of this term, but to the right and left of us, where the halachic imperative is not the same, or the ask in terms of not, of romance is not the same. So it's really complicated. And so we are seeing unique fallout within our community. And so the paper is acknowledging that reality and how some of the terms and things that we grew up with as, you know, as inculcated in our ways of thinking, like around shogeg and mezid when it comes to, you know, sinning, quote unquote, whether I do something by accident or on purpose, and the different ramifications of that. And what it like, for, so I give this example, right? If I'm going to decide to sin with a partner, right, to violate the halacha, that means having, if I want to be ethical, having a conversation about that in advance. Well, that really is mezid, right? That's, I am making a deliberate decision to sin. And so that means, yes, it's ethically and emotionally and psychologically the right thing to do is have a conversation about boundaries and consent and all of that prior. But that means acknowledging we are about to sin together. And that's really complicated if you grew up in the Orthodox community. Whereas, oh, it just happened. That's a shogeg, right? Somehow that feels more comfortable from a religious perspective, but is emotionally, psychologically really not good. So I'm just trying to give examples here of where our community is in such a unique place that we need to be thoughtful about the needs of our specific community when thinking about sexual education. And that's really what the paper is about. So it starts with thinking about high school, but I also talk about stories of adults who are struggling with these things as well. The curriculum is sort of the response. It's here's what we can do about it. Here's an opening to having all kinds of conversation on topics that are complicated, like casual sex and masturbation and pornography. Let's actually do this, have these conversations in a space where we can be the voice in our students' heads some of the time to help them navigate this so they don't feel quite so alone in their struggles around this.
And with the curriculum, is the idea to share this with our parent body so they'll engage their children with it? Is it to even promote it more broadly to the wider modern Orthodox community as a potential resource for them? What do you see as kind of the different ways in which this can be taken outwards from our four walls of our school?
Yeah, so I think for parents, it's complicated. Some parents are really comfortable and want to have these conversations with their students, with their children. And some parents are very happy to let us do that.
Well, some kids also.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
I taught in, when I was at GPATS, I taught a woman whose father was a co-author with Dr. Jenny Rosenfeld of a sexual intimacy guide. And we happened to be learning Masechet Kiddushin. And when the intimate details of Kiddushei Bia, of marriage through intercourse came up, she shared that this was something that she had had dozens of discussions with her father, and she did not want to have any discussions with any other adult about that ever again. So, yes, sometimes parents who want to have those conversations can yield a kind of pushback from their kids.
Yeah, so the parent part is complicated. I think it would be great for parents to have a copy so they're aware of what it is we are talking about. But I also really hope that this guide is not just something that is used by SAR. I think when we sat down to compile it, it was really with the intention of it being a resource for our broader community. And then every educator or whoever wants to use it can think about their particular audience who may have slightly different needs or issues than our students and structure it in the way that they want to. There's guiding questions and there's introductions that people can use and I hope will be really helpful. And it also, you know, we sifted through the sources to help people find the material. But it is really, really my hope that more people will use this curriculum because this isn't just an issue at SAR. And I think that that sort of comes back to the lecharchila bidyeved question that people ask about a curriculum like this. I actually had somebody once ask me the question, okay, I understand why SAR would do this, but like make an argument why we should teach this in Passaic, New Jersey. And I really believe that lechatchila, we are trying to have marriages, right, that are sexually healthy, that where the communication is healthy, where the ethics are the foundation of the relationship. And Judaism has so much to offer in terms of guidance and meaning making in that area. Why would we not share the beauty of our tradition with a larger community?
We might assume that most reasonable people can navigate these issues independently. However, my experience has shown that this is actually not always the case. For instance, I've encountered situations where a husband makes his wife feel ashamed or maybe inadequate regarding nidah or mikvah observance, or he might express disgust towards menstruation. Yeah, these are seemingly mundane examples, yet they highlight the importance of ethical sensitivity and the need for greater kindness and compassion in these areas. And that's ultimately the goal we're striving for. And I think we can all stand to grow in this area because it is sensitive and charged and deeply important.
The bidyeved, that's true too. The harm reduction model, right? The idea that often what happens with people is that if they decide to not observe the halacha fully, then when it comes to sexuality because it feels too difficult or it feels like it doesn't speak to them, that they'll throw out, you know, sort of the baby with the bathwater. That is true. And we also know that it's religiously corrosive and sexually disruptive when people are not psychologically healthy in this area. Psychologically damaged people make bad ethical choices. And so we need to take this on from a bidyeved perspective in the sense that, yes, we know that people are engaging in this. And yes, they might be in violation of halacha, but why should they also be in violation of ethics? And it's because they don't know once they get rid of the halacha that there could be a Jewish ethic that they're still practicing. Now that, again, that even that sentence, I know for some people will say, I can't even believe you're mentioning not keeping halacha. But we are fooling ourselves if we are not, again, engaging the realities of every community that people are not always keeping in line with the halacha, and we owe it to them. It's a religious imperative, a Torah imperative to teach this.
As you're speaking, especially when it comes to the questions of ethics and communication, I'm wondering how gendered this curriculum is or should be, or how it's designed, because I do feel like there's a different kind of conversation around the same sources with our male students and with our female students, given kind of a heteronormative society when it comes to these kinds of questions. So I'm wondering if as you wrote this curriculum, that was front of mind, or if that's something which you've turned to since you initially worked on it and kind of worked on highlighting at various points in the curriculum.
So right now it is written to be taught sort of in the same way by whoever studies it, and that was very intentional. Of course, depending on the needs of your particular class, the conversation is going to go in different directions.
Yoetzer Halacha Ilana Gadish and I worked on a teacher's guide.
And that is more specific to SAR and to its needs and its particular student body. But one of the things we're hoping eventually to do is that faculty that teaches this course will be contributing to the teacher's guide as well. So if somebody had particular success or particular issues that came up around a text, they will be able to include that and add it. It'll be sort of a living teacher's guide where we'll see, you know, and that way also we can track change because this area is moving so quickly. The kinds of questions that come up are changing all the time. I should also just point out that we were pretty deliberate that this isn't addressing LGBTQ and issues that come up with halacha in that realm. And that was intentional, too, because in an ethics, in the realm of ethics, whatever relationship you're in, these are relevant. But of course, there is an assumption to a certain extent of heteronormativity. And that can be really challenging and might feel for some groups like they are being erased from this curriculum. And I acknowledge that at this point, and I do hope that there will be a part two of this particular curriculum. But this was our starting point, and we'll see sort of how it develops from here. We acknowledge in the introduction that this is step one. And that again, for this to be vibrant, it's going to have to be rewritten. Difficult as that is for me to say, every couple of years because the world is changing so quickly.
Right. When Rabbanit Schlaff and Mr. Fleischer wrote the initial curriculum for 10th grade, whatever it was, 15, 16 years ago, I think that was cutting edge then. And they were using Yocheved Debo's work and other people who had contributed on this subject. And it's the kind of thing where it does seem like every 3 to 5 years we need to reassess and revise some of the material. All right, so we're now putting this out there. We've published a book version of this that we're sharing with parents, that we're sharing with other educators. And we've touched on some of these points, but I want to kind of give you a chance to share your own sense, perhaps, not just of the excitement to share this, which and the imperative that you see in sharing it, but maybe some of the hesitations that you have about putting this material out there in the world with your name on it.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I'm a Tanakh teacher, and I love comparative religion, and I love Jewish philosophy. This was something I sort of came, you know, into later a little bit, but I see it as so important. I'm not sure where else I would want to put my name at this point, because I feel so strongly that this is an important conversation. Again, I think I always come back to a little bit of anxiety around, will people think that I am condoning non-halachic behavior on the one hand, and then the pushback on the other side that why are we caring so much about halachic behavior? There is a deep tension in our tradition, and I know some people are really starting to address this, but I'll just say with my Jewish philosophy hat on for a moment, right? One of the most exciting things that used to be to teach was ethics and halacha conflict, right? What do we do when Jewish law and our ethical instincts or a particular ethical philosophy are in contradiction with one another? And there are volumes and volumes of books and essays written on this topic. And I love teaching that as part of our Jewish philosophy curriculum and helping our students think and navigate that. But in some ways, what feels more pressing right now for me, is when halacha and mental health seem to come into conflict with one another. And that's something I'm really struggling with right now and is some of the pushback that I have gotten as well. Right? If mental health professionals, if doctors are recommending that certain behaviors or practices are not only developmentally appropriate, but actually healthy and good behaviors, and halacha seems to be demanding exactly the opposite, right? So for example, around masturbation is the most obvious example. How can we teach something that is against the advice of those professionals?
Or against halacha,
exactly. What does it look like? And I think that that particular conflict is in some ways at the heart of this curriculum. And so it's not an easy read. I think there are people who look at it and they feel like, you know, their response is, you're not giving enough psak. Where's the bottom line here? And there are others who read this and feel like, why are you caring so much about what halacha says? Where's the broader interpretation that may allow for more flexibility of behavior? And we're trying to honor both of those. We live with that tension, and that is a struggle. That is a struggle I personally feel as a teacher, and I think when we talk about what comes up in classrooms, it's often around that particular tension.
At the end of the day, we foreground for students our commitment to the halachic system. That said, we also recognize the reality of individual struggles and validate the feelings of students who may be experiencing difficulties. We're clear with students that if they're feeling distress or acute challenges, they should seek individual guidance from someone who will meet them where they are and offer guidance that can speak to both the spiritual and the mental health elements. I think about some examples when dealing with the halachot of nida, right? Individuals facing mental health challenges, for example, a woman who might have OCD around preparing for mikvah immersion, may find guidance from poskim who offer more lenient interpretations in certain situations. It's not always so black and white. And I think we do also try to emphasize that for our students. And I think it's super important to just say, we are teaching towards a growth mindset. We emphasize the aspirational.
Yeah, I think this is incredibly important. And sometimes, when you get a chance like this, when you publish something to reflect back on the process to get there, you realize sometimes how much time and effort went into this. And so I know you've been working on an essay on this, the advocacy essay, for at least 7 or 8 years, and this curriculum for another several years. I just want to hear from you about what you feel like you've gained from having some of that space and having a place, a school and a school community that has encouraged you to kind of work on this and pushed you to work on this, so that there could be not just a curriculum for us, but some deep researched thinking about this subject.
I'm incredibly grateful, as stressful as it has been. I'm incredibly grateful to work in a place that doesn't just accept the status quo and say, this is the way it has to be. This is how we do things, so this is how it is. I deeply, deeply love modern orthodoxy. I would say it's a spiritual experience for me to live with these tensions, to navigate them. It's part of where I pour out my soul during davening. It's part of what informs my Torah learning and reading of all sacred texts. And so the opportunity to do this in this realm was huge for me. Also because, I'll be honest, right now, most of the people I learn with are alum. And it is such a beautiful experience for me to get to meet and re-engage some of my former students 10 years, sometimes 15 years even, after they've graduated high school, and get to reconnect on this very deep religious, spiritual, and emotional level around this area. So it gives me access to different ways of thinking, to see how people have grown and developed from learning our material, from going on beyond SAR, and even for me personally, to be able to have the opportunity to learn texts with amazing colleagues like you and everyone else who sat around that table, and to reflect on some of these just incredible ideas together, is so invigorating. And it's why, again, Machon Siach is such a gift in so many ways, because we get to do this. And again, why I know that this is going to be a book that in 5 years is irrelevant. And I think that that is ultimately a good thing. I remember, like, growing up, right, we used to talk about, I used to think about going to a movie. Right? It was like a huge decision, and how would I be able to, you know, integrate it into my religious outlook? And afterwards, I used to spend time talking about it with people. And that was such a defining part of what my modern orthodoxy was.
We live different childhoods.
Fair. I just thought, we're both rabbis, kids. Yeah. So. But, but today, kids don't get to make choices in the same way we did, because algorithms feed them things all the time, and they actually get to be more passive, and things are just fed to them. So we're meeting them at a really different stage, where it's not about choices to the same extent, where, we sort of have to catch them again. And this is why I think developing that moral compass is so important before they're making that big decision. It's got to be a responsive right away, to see something and know how to respond. As opposed to, deliberating it to death in the moment.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about this, but, the work we're doing with Guiding Good Choices, which is a very different arm of the whole Siach operation, is not that far away from what you're talking about. It's about giving kids and their parents the tools to have conversations and to discuss things before the algorithms or the desires or whatever it is kind of puts them in a place where they don't necessarily want to be or where their parents certainly don't want them to be. And I feel like that's really what one of the things that we're trying to do as high school educators is to empower our students and their families to not get caught up in those kinds of things and to make kind of the informed choices as they go along. I also wanted to add one more thing, which I really feel like a deep sense of gratitude to you, Shuli. I remember a bunch of years ago when I was working at YU and Stern and in GPETS, and we had placed several women in shuls to serve as scholars or, you know, assistant congregational leaders. And at one point, one of the women called me up after a few months on the job, and she asked me, "What do you say to women who come to you for spiritual counseling when they've been a victim of sexual assault, when they're a survivor of sexual abuse?" They're maybe working out certain things with a therapist or with a loved one or whatever it is. But if they come to you for like spiritual guidance, what are your go-to sources or what are your go-to conversations? And I was like, how many times, you've been in this job for less than 6 months, how many women have come to you with this? And they were like, 4 or 5. And I was like, okay, I've been a rabbi for 10 years. I've never had a single person come to me to have that conversation. So there is something about the relationship you have as a teacher with a student, as a female religious role model with female students and alumni, which allows you to connect and have those conversations and provide ahead of time a religious framework, but also then a spiritual system that they can tap into anywhere along the way. And I think that that's really not just an advertisement for female spiritual leadership, but also for what you're doing on this particular subject.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think that we're dealing with something that is very, very real in our community. We have a lot of work to do. And we need people to take this as seriously as possible because, again, the damage and the hurt is so intense and the possibility for beauty is so real as well, for meaning and beauty and inspiration. And, if we could get everybody on board, we'd be a better community, a Torah religious ethical community for it.
Thank you so much, Shuli, for joining us on this podcast and for all the work you did to make this curriculum and to write the essay. And thank you, everyone, to listening to this episode of The Grand Conversation. Please be sure to visit our website, www.machonsiach.org, where you can subscribe to our podcast and find all of our work, including Shuli's paper and other things that Shuli and others have written on a variety of subjects. Until next time, this has been The Grand Conversation, the Machon Siach Podcast.